God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
Well, the God who first created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I do want to discuss some of President Trump's nominees. One of them is a horrendous walking disaster who belongs nowhere near the job for which President Trump has apparently nominated her. Another is very good, and the third is kind of, well, absolutely puzzling. Perhaps an absolute catastrophe for American labor policy, but a payoff to the unions. We need to be able to be honest. I support President Trump's policies. He's been hired to do a job. I believe God has used him in remarkable ways, miraculous ways, honestly, to reveal what the deep state is and how much it hates us. And how much it hates him, the deep state. Not all the people within government are the deep state, but there's very definitely deep state actors who consider themselves more powerful. And, well, they are more powerful than presidents in some ways, and that they don't have to go out for re-election. So I do want to address that, but because we're near Thanksgiving, I wanted to start with just a Thanksgiving reflection, just a way of sharing. You guys are so kind to hang out with us during this program, and you deserve to know a little bit about me and things that formed me, and I'll tell you, one of my favorite Thanksgivings was pretty awkward. My father decided to take us fishing on that Thanksgiving day, and my sister didn't go. And I don't know why. He had no problem taking my sister fishing, and she enjoyed it. And it was just Dad and I in that morning. And we went out to a lake probably an hour and a half away from home. This was the last Thanksgiving where Dad lived at home. And then he made the very, very bad decision to divorce my mom, out of which I got a great gift of a half-brother. But other than that, that was a very bad decision. And Dad and I went out to this lake, and we fished, and I got wet, really wet. I don't really remember how. I know we were fishing in a boat. I was probably playing around like a little boy. And then we got back to Dad's Wagoneer, and someone on that lake had parked their Jeep in front of ours, mindlessly, not realizing that we couldn't get out. And Dad thought about using his winch to move this guy's Jeep, but decided to give him a little while to come and get it. And we honked a horn, and this guy didn't come, and there was really no way out of there other than using the winch to move this guy's Jeep, which Dad didn't really want to do because it could hurt either Jeep. So we knew we were going to be late to eat. We knew Mom would be hurt by that. And I was starved and cold. So the pre-Thanksgiving meal that day was, my dad always had food for hunting and fishing, and he had a can of Dinty Moore beef stew. Remember that stuff? And a big can of it. Got that out of the back of the Wagoneer and put it on the engine of the Wagoneer, I think on the head gasket, and heated up the truck. And pulled that out. We had that and cold through lake temperature. Coca-Cola, I think. Sugar water. What is it about days like that where the Dinty Moore beef tastes better? What was it that to sit in that truck, Wagoneer, and to take turns eating that beef stew, he with his fork and mine with mine, drinking Coca-Cola, listening to the Washington State Cougars replay on the radio, football. What was it? I think it was that Dad performed this little act of magic, finding a way to heat the stew up and having some, that I knew my dad could move that guy's Jeep. I knew he knew how to do that, but he didn't. He waited for the guy to get back a long time, up to the point of being late, but it was Dad. And then when the guy did show up and saw what he'd done and realized that's what the honking was about, was so utterly apologetic and invited us to his home for Thanksgiving, which is not far away. And we made it back, and we did have to stop at a payphone and call Mom. But when I popped in to the house, I remember telling her how cool that was. And I didn't catch the look then. She's since described it to me. She's really angry at Dad. She didn't want him to go fishing. She was worried something like this might happen. But she gave him a look and said, yeah, your dad certainly knows how to take care of you in the woods. In the woods. So we'll share another story. I'll share a story with you as we wrap up the show. It's a story called The $350 Apple Crisp. There's a real story about a $350 Apple Crisp. It was one of my daughter's favorite Thanksgivings, in a way. And also probably the very worst Thanksgiving we've ever had as a family. Probably the worst, and in one way for my daughter, her favorite, even in a horrible time. Let's do talk about these nominees. President Trump's nominee to be Labor Secretary is absolutely someone that no Republican should back, period, ever. She should be embarrassed during the questioning. To me, this is a payoff to the labor unions who either endorsed President Trump or stood aside and didn't fight against him. This woman's name is Lori Chavez Duramer, and she is against everything or for everything that has destroyed the American economy. Amnesty for illegal immigrants, forced unionization of private sector employees. She opposes school choice. She wants expanded unionization of government employees. That's a pretty danging list. Very bad. And her commitment to this is longstanding. She's been in Congress. She's worked in the state of California. These policies are not in question with her. So let's go through them real quickly and how they will just continue to destroy America. Amnesty for illegal immigrants will get more illegal immigrants. It will reward the Democrats for their policy of open borders for any and all comers with the expressed, well, not expressed because they won't admit it, but obvious effort to overthrow the Electoral College. And that has worked. Now, granted, Hispanic voters increased for President Trump by precipitous amounts, praise God. And all these newcomers are not going to do that, particularly if amnesty is granted in this way. Forced unionization of private sector employees. This is utter brutality. This is taking an organization and interspersing them between you and the employer. You don't work for your employer if the union's the one who calls the shots. Now, if you want to join a union, be my guest. But forcing people to join it is just that. It's force. And in places like Washington State, this has been used in bizarre ends. There was a case in Washington State where they'd been forcing home health care workers to join a union. And this was sometimes people who were simply taking care of mom and dad or a sibling who'd either gotten grievously hurt or were aged to the point where they couldn't take care of themselves, or sometimes they just had terrible conditions, terrible diseases. The Democrats in Washington State were so obsessed with paying off labor unions that they were forcing these people to join these unions for the privilege of taking care of family members. That was outlawed. The Supreme Court outlawed that. Well, they didn't outlaw it, but said it was unconstitutional. Here's what Washington State did. They said, oh, okay. We're going to force you to join, to become an employee of a private company. They're all unionized. See, they refuse to follow the law. Because when you join a union, you are joining a pay collector for the Democrat Party. And when it's a government unions exist to do one thing. That is to grow government. Union business models, on a whole, reward the number of employees, not the excellence of employees. Now, there's some great unions. And they do some great job for employees. Employees should be allowed to join them. And employees should be allowed to not join them. But President Trump's nominee to be the labor secretary wants to force you to join a union. Or to be able to do that. She's opposed to school choice. And in this, she has the support of Randy Weingarten. Let's remember something about Randy Weingarten. She is the boss lady of the most powerful so-called teachers union in the country, the American Federation of Teachers. let's review her recent history. She kept kids home from school, even though everybody knew kids were not at risk from the COVID flu. She made kids wear face diapers, even though everybody knew they didn't work. She is feverishly obsessed with teaching kids pornographic ideas and gender madness and gender ideology. She is virulently against President Trump because he's orange and quite literally Hitler. She is a precipitous spender of government money for no real results. The more money we've spent on the government schools through the unions, the worse the results have been. She backs this woman to be Labor Secretary, Lori Chavez de Ramer, and President Trump has selected her. Republicans like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul and others who are independent must oppose this nomination. She is opposed to school choice. Of course she is, because then she gets the support of Randy Weingarten. She wants you to be forced to join a labor union, and she wants your kids forced to go to government schools unless you can afford to homeschool or private school. Not everybody can. She wants an expanded unionization of government employees. Right now, there are government employees once again being taught by lawyers who used to work for Barack Obama and the Democrat Party how to stay home, to refuse to go to work so that they don't have to carry out the orders of President Trump. They're being taught how to say no to the orders of President Trump. They're already bragging at places like the EPA that they're figuring out how to avoid his orders, to not do what he says, even though they supposedly report into him. The fact that President Trump has nominated this woman could be deeply puzzling until you understand it's clearly a payoff to the labor unions. That's all it is. President Trump should know better. Please learn a lesson. God has done miraculous things through you, President Trump, but please learn a lesson. You let Tony Fauci run the country, and it destroyed your first term. It stole your second term, which you've now miraculously had replaced. This woman is a labor union version of Fauci. Now, she's bad. Very, very bad. It is the position of Surgeon General that has me more concerned, perhaps. Now, the Labor Secretary has actual power. The Surgeon General doesn't have much direct power, except the power of persuasion and a witness with the Mockingbird media. So this woman's name is Dr. Jeanette Nationwide, and if you watch Fox News, you've seen her. You might remember when she was lobbying to stay home and stay safe, or that everybody should take the injections, or celebrating Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg for removing content that correctly pointed out that the COVID flu was made in China, probably in the Wuhan lab, or for taking down the web pages of people who said, you know, these vaccines are not vaccines. You know, they've changed the definition of vaccine to make them appear to be vaccines. You know, they're not safe and effective, right? She celebrated that censorship. Dr. Jeanette Nationwide did one of those dance videos. Remember when the hospitals were so busy that there were battleships parked off or aircraft carriers parked off the tips of the oceans and in New York and Los Angeles and outside of Washington State, to absorb all the bodies of the people, the 5,000-10,000 people dying every single day of the COVID flu? Remember all those lies? Well, when that was all going on, Dr. Nationwide decided to go make a video where she danced around. Oh, she's had a change of heart. A convenient change of heart. Wow. So deeply disappointed that President Trump thinks this woman belongs anywhere near the White House. Loyal Republicans should tell the president they refuse to back either of these nominees. They'll be doing President Trump a favor. I'm Todd Herman. We'll come back on The Disciples View. View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll come up, I'll get to the Tower Babbling. I'll describe this $350 apple crisp, both the worst Thanksgiving of my life and, in a way, the best. And for my daughter, probably the worst Thanksgiving of her life, and in one small way, the best. $350 apple crisp. I've been worried that I've been speaking too much about the lies of transgenderism. And I worry about that until I see, again, that the argument Democrats want to make about this man pretending to be a woman who's been elected to Congress is he just needs a place to go to the bathroom. That's it. That's all that's at stake. If that were the case, he could use one of the private restrooms. He has a restroom in his office, for instance. Of course, it's not about that. As I've been saying for 8 to 10 years, this is about the existence of truth. We either have truth or we don't. The truth is, he's a man. That is inarguable. There is a state representative who's another man who pretends to be a woman. And I don't want to say their names because autogynephilia is very, very close cousin to being a narcissist. They have many of the same tendencies. Autogynephilia, people who suffer from that, cause others to suffer. They are sexually aroused by fooling you into thinking they're a woman, which most can't, or forcing you to pretend along with them. That they really like. It's narcissism. So I'm not saying their names because it's what they want. But one of the things about this narcissism and the lies of transgenderism is that we have to confront what it is. It's an argument over does truth exist. It's also a perfect example of magic words. And magic words stops conversation. You can be talking to someone, for instance, the other day. This is a silly example, but I have a weekly ritual I give myself that I work out so hard.
Representative Nancy Mace, who has led the Republican Party.
I work out so hard. I burn sometimes 4,000, 5,000, 5,500 calories a day. And I do that so consistently that once a week, I give myself a little relaxation. I go to a pizza place in North Idaho and I eat like a swine. I eat a full pizza and a full Caesar salad. And I've gotten to know the young staff that work there. And there's one young woman who's been working there for 3 or 4 years. And she and I goof around and I know her boyfriend. And if she's talked to me about her dad, she's like a little sister. She keeps promising, man, she's going to eat this pizza that I helped invent. So a few weeks ago, I said, okay, this has gone on long enough. She gave me a pinky promise. I'm going to eat the pizza. I'll talk to you when I see you next Thursday. Okay. So I go in and said, hey, Des, how was the pizza? She goes, I didn't eat it. I started to make fun of her. She goes, please stop. What's going on? She goes, Jake's dad. What? She went on to tell me that her fiance's dad had had a stroke. Now that's a magic word, and it should be. Oh, all bets are off. Oh my goodness, can I pray for him and tell me about him? And is your fiance okay? And oh gosh, I need to pray for him. Now that's a legitimate magic word. An illegitimate magic word ends conversation because that's what it's designed to do. That's what transgender is. No one is transgender. No one's been born in the wrong body. That has never happened. But the word ends conversation, but it also scrambles thought. Well, I'm a transgender woman, says this guy who serves in Congress. So, in this case against a guy, a doctor, all he did was say, hey, my hospital, Texas so-called Christian Medical Center, Texas Medical Center, has continued to do these wrong sex hormones and surgeries on kids despite it being illegal. That's all he did. My hospital's breaking the law. This isn't to be done in Texas. He didn't share the names of patients. He didn't share anything that would violate privacy. But the DOJ leapt in to destroy him, taking armed cops to his door. They proceeded to bring about a grand jury case. In that grand jury case, they presented false evidence. They've now admitted it was false evidence. They just didn't know it was false. Did they stop the trial? No. But now hear this. This is from the National Review, Ed Whelan pointing this out. The federal prosecutor who's been leading the attempt to destroy Dr. Ethan Hame for blowing the whistle on illegal mutilations of children
That's what he was doing. The federal prosecutor who's been leading this has been terminated. Her name is Tina Ansari. It turns out that Ansari's family runs Fresh Brew Group, one of the company's largest private label coffee and tea producers. Well, but does this have to do with the live transgenderism? Well, stay tuned. Fresh Brew Group's customers include multiple hospitals in the Texas Medical Center, where TCH and BCM are located. TCH and BCM are or were actual potential customers. Ansari's brother, Ali Ansari, is president and CEO of Fresh Brews Group, and Ansari herself was formerly an executive of the company. While the investigation of Haim was underway, which never should have happened in the first place, Ali Ansari attended a VIP fundraiser for Texas Christian Hospital. Since the time Haim was indicted, Ali Ansari has co-sponsored two Texas Christian Hospital fundraisers, and Fresh Brew has co-sponsored one of them. This is a massive conflict of interest. This woman should be disbarred. This should have been disclosed. She shouldn't have been in this position. But then again, the prosecution itself is illegitimate. The man simply reported what was going on at the hospital. They were breaking the law. They were harming kids. See, transgender is a magic word. And it's being rallied about in Congress. A man pretending to be a woman says Congressman Nancy Mace doesn't care about protecting women. She just hates this Congressman McBride, another man who pretends to be a woman because McBride is Mace's equal as a woman. Now you play the sound.
Representative Nancy Mace, who has led the Republican Party to kick out the first transgender Congresswoman, Sarah McBride, from women's bathrooms and changing rooms in the Capitol, and who has led Speaker Johnson to declare her a man, just let her mask slip a little bit too low. It was never about sports. It was never about bathrooms. It was never about women's safety. She hates Sarah McBride so much because a transgender person dare be her equal. You know, Sarah McBride represents just as many people as Nancy Mace does. In fact, she represents more because Delaware has 1 million people in it. Her district only has 739,000 in it. She earned her position in Congress just as much as Representative Mace did. But it's clear that the animosity has nothing to do with Mace's safety or women's safety or anything like that. It has everything to do with how much she hates her for being her equal. Now, McBride is going to have difficulty fighting this for herself. She's going to need allies. And I hope Democrats are ready to stand up.
Her equal. Now, the subtext of this, of course, is we're talking about a woman-on-woman incident. And, of course, we're not. Nancy Mace hasn't conveyed any hatred for this man masquerading as a woman, this man who wears woman as costume. She's simply spoken an inarguable truth. That's a man. Now, if you take something like this and you compare it to any circumstance that always ends up losing, there's a great discussion. Remember Dean Cain? You know, acts in Christian movies, Understand Knows the Lord. He played Superman. Do you remember that on TV? Or he was a Superman character. The guy who ruined Bud Light, and I don't like to say his name either because he loves to have his name said, Dylan Mulvaney, I'll say it, who pretended to be a woman and went and got the surgeries, or supposedly the surgeries and obviously the hormones. He was in a video with another man pretending to be a woman, and Dean Cain simply said, I don't think either of you are women. And they wrote back and said, and you weren't Superman. Dean Cain said, you're right, I was pretending. The fact is this, in one way, that man we just heard from, who's a state representative, is right. In one way, they are equal. They were both elected. Check. In another way, they're equal. They both have a job to do. Check. In another way, they're equal. They're both made by God. Check. In his image. Male and female. One female, Nancy Mace. One male, McBride. This isn't an argument about bathrooms. It's not an argument about hatred. It's not an argument about medicine. It's not an argument about healthcare. It's an argument about truth. And by the way, who is truth? I didn't misspeak. Who is truth? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to the Father but through me. God is love and he is truth. The people masquerading as women are the lie. Oh, they are liars, but they are also the lie. This extends beyond the halls of Congress. In this soundbite here, so-called scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson pretends to believe WNBA teams cannot beat NBA teams because women are treated differently in society, not because of biology.
Bill, every 20 minutes on your platform, you come up with another reason why the Democrats lost. No. You already have the answer. They lost the election. So anything you say
That's not true.
They did it.
First of all, you don't watch this show, so you don't know that. Engage with the idea here. What I'm asking is, Scientific American is saying, basically, that the reason why an NBA, WNBA team can't beat the Lakers is because of societal bias.
What you're saying is not Scientific American says that. An editor for Scientific American says that, who no longer has the job. So don't indict a 170-year-old magazine because somebody
Scientific American, and they're printing something
because someone enters the cesspool that is social media and then participates in that exchange.
Why can't you just say this is not scientific and Scientific American should do better?
Well, does she still have her job?
No. Not because of this. I said the scandal is not her tweet.
Because that was like a year ago, was it? Which one was a year ago?
I think a year ago, women still couldn't beat men in basketball or any other sport. And it wasn't because of society. You don't see a problem.
By the way, long distance swimming, women might actually have the advantage. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to file you under part of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely part of the problem. Long distance swimming, women might have the advantage. He's talking about the fat content of their body, apparently. Are you going to talk about limb length, hip size, hip rotation power, size of the heart, and the size of the lungs? No, you're not. You're going to talk about percentage of lean muscle. This is a literal argument about whether or not evidence right before our face matters. And it doesn't need to involve hatred. You're maybe going into Thanksgiving right now, and you may face a circumstance like a friend of mine at church faces. This will be the first Thanksgiving where a friend of mine is going with a nephew who's 23 and has announced that he is a woman. And he anticipates being treated as a woman. He's made it clear that at Thanksgiving dinner, he intends to sit with the women because he is a woman. He intends to be referred to as her and by his new name. And my dear friend wants to go to dinner and is going. We've been having a discussion about remaining in the spirit here. The question here, what would Jesus do? What would he do? Let's start with what he would view. This young man, 23, is baptized in the church, served in the church, knew the Lord Jesus, has walked away from Jesus, no longer believes that Jesus is the only way to the Father, believes that Buddha can get you there or Hinduism can get you there. He's playing the game where all faiths are equal. Allah is the same thing as Jesus Christ. He has been spiritually captured, and let's begin there. How would Jesus view him? We know this. He's been baptized. He confessed Jesus as Lord and Savior. He's confused. He's captured. Jesus called us to free the captives. So my friend going to this dinner is going to dinner and may be seated next to a captive. He cannot, on his own, free him. He could drive him into the arms of his jailer by being cruel, by sneering. The young man is coming dressed as a woman. It's absurd. He showed me the pictures. It's absurd. He doesn't look the least bit feminine, though he, in his deluded, spiritually captured mind, thinks he does. No sneering. That's a captive. In terms of he or she, I've asked my friend to simply practice not using pronouns. It's hard until you get used to it. And it's like any other change of language. What he said to me is what really bothers him is that he grew up close with this young man. They hunted and fished together, and he mourns for that. He has a feeling this young man's going to corner him. He's going to sit down and say to my friend and my woman, what would Jesus do? He'd be looking at a spiritual captive. He might avoid the question. Jesus may say something like, well, I think what matters is who am I? Who am I? Who do you know me to be? This might be the question my friend asks his nephew. Well, let's start with this. Forget the woman part. Forget the gender part for just a second. Apart from all that, who are you? Forget the nephew role. Who are you? If you ask the question that way, it can lead to one of two points, obviously. It can lead to anger. Answer my question, in which case my friend's going to have to say, you're my nephew I love. Or, want to do it non-gendered? You're a family member I deeply love. I miss spending time with you. I love you too much to lie. I do not believe you're a woman. I don't believe you can become one. But I know your family and I know I love you. Now, who are you apart from all this? Are you still created by God? If so, what happened to his image? It's going to be a tough conversation. You may be facing it. I hope you go in prayerfully, filled with the Holy Spirit. I'm Todd Herman. We'll come back on The Disciples View. Disciples View. This is Disciples View. That's my name. Sorry, I get a little bit, when I near Thanksgiving, I just want to talk about Thanksgiving. So sometimes I get a little bit, not punch drunk, but a little bit just anxious to speak of the holiday. So my apologies, Disciples View. Email here from, I'm just going to use the first initial J. Hey there, Todd. Thanks for talking about same-sex attraction recently. I'm 57 years old now, and it took me a lifetime to figure out how to navigate life. I basically made an agreement with God that I don't want to burn in hell. I did that when I was a young man, so show me the way. I'm still struggling with earthly issues, but I've been celibate for a dozen years or more. Yeah, I still struggle with porn and anger. I've got to admit it's hard and lonely life, not having a life partner or some kind of regular affection. I've read lots of books, including now The Gulag Archipelago. I do realize that there are millions of people who have gone through much more than we pampered Americans. Christians and gays have both given their lives for what they believe is truth. I'll keep striving for perfection, nevertheless. Jay. Wow. Oh, brother. I just hurt hearing this. I'm so proud of you. It really pains me to hear this. I'm so unbelievably proud of you. How lonely it must be. I'm so proud of you. You're doing a hard thing. And I'm proud of you. Loneliness. It's not good that man is alone, and you speak of this special affection. I've heard friends say to men in your position, well, you can get that same affection from brothers. No, you can't. No, I'm sorry. Some can't. What you're doing in committing to Christ here is so laudable. And I hear you struggling with porn and anger, and I read your sadness, reading about the Gulag Archipelago, a prison, a Stalinist prison. Brother, have you ever looked at the model of Jesus and ever asked him, how did he do it? In times where I've felt really lonely, I've asked the Lord Jesus, how did you do it? The same answer comes back to me. When Jesus voluntarily forfeited his deity for a little while, he turned to the Father. During the first communion, it says, Jesus took bread. He broke it. He gave thanks. He did the same with the wine, giving thanks. When he was about to perform a miracle, so often, if not always, he asked the Father, most famously with Lazarus, when he was raising him from the dead. He was asking, and he made a point of it. I'm not asking for myself. I know that you'll answer me. I'm asking so that these around may see. There's a really prayerful a prayer formation I've used. When I've not been wanting to give up mental sin, and I act like I want to give it up. Oh, make this go away. These thoughts are so bad. I've been using a tool of asking God, make me not want it. Make me want to give it up. Make me want you more than the sin. Make me sick at the thought. Change me. Now, I haven't gone so far as I'm speaking this to you, Jay, to say, make me joyful. Make me joyful in this bondservant move, this wrestling match where I have surrendered to you. Make me joyful in it. I can't solve anything, Jay. God can fix. I can't. But I would ask you, have you prayed that the Lord would force into you joy for the act you're taking to deny yourself? And I'm reading through the lines in your note, and it seems to me that you're telling me you're same-sex attracted, which makes me even more proud of you. Because there's this belief that, well, that's the only love I could have. And yet, you know, this weekend, I had occasion to talk with a friend briefly. And in chatting, we talked about the oldest, just this through text messages. And great Christian woman just reminded me that she had lived in a same-sex, quote, marriage for 3 years. And I brought this up because a dear, dear friend I have has two kids who've declared same-sex attraction status. They're young. This is who they are. You have to accept this. And my dear friend lives in Oregon, where, of course, this is lauded. So he was asking me, and I reached out to my friend who's a therapist and asked her about this. She said, yeah, for 3 years, I was fully convinced that was love. And now I understand it was delusion. She mourns. She repents. And it was hard. And even now, in her 40s, this happened to her in her 20s. Even now, sometimes those feelings creep back. Because she, Jay, like you, is alone. But not alone. I wager there are many people who are proud of you. And if not, I hope you'll join a Christian community. I don't see that in your note. I don't see here a Christian community. I don't see a church of loving people to come around you. I hope and I pray you will seek that out, for it is not good that man is alone. And I am so proud of you, Jay. Thank you for writing. Thank you for taking a stand. One thing before we get to the Tower of Babbling. North Carolina Hurricane Helene victims were gifted 100 tiny homes from a builder as a donation. The victims were living in them, and then the county came in and said they won't pass inspection. Their county government kicked them out to live in tents or out in the open.
That, and all these groups are coming down here, and it's a nice thought, yeah. And they're building these tiny homes that don't have to be inspected, so it's a shed with an outlet. Well,
they do have to be inspected. We're finding that out. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we had a person to donate 100 of them down in Barnesville, and we got 25 of them put up, you know, for people to live in, and which was better than the dirt.
Well, of course.
And so they were living in them, and the county comes in and says they won't pass inspection. You can't do it.
Yeah.
So we got 75 of them sitting down there that won't, you know, that we can't do nothing with.
And we know I know like volunteers that have been coming in like every other week, every weekend, things like that, that are coming back, and they're bringing all this material, all these tools. They've got like already kits pretty much cut out.
Yeah.
To just put them together real quick, and I'm like, I've tried to tell them like people are not going to be able to live in these, and it's like maybe one person could live in there.
Yeah.
And it's
still
not living.
It's better than a tent. Right. I mean,
it is better than a tent, for sure.
My father requires mercy, not sacrifice. I understand that it's a bureaucracy's job to employ bureaucracy. And it's also the human being's job within the bureaucracy sometimes to say, you know what? Romans 13 says we're to follow the authorities. Jesus Christ said, my Father requires mercy, not sacrifice all the time. Sometimes the obedience is to the mercy giver to provide mercy. Because remember this, those who provide mercy will receive mercy. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
And got my lipstick on today, so I'm a little bit more together. I cannot live in a country that voted for Trump. I cannot spend another 4 years under that man.
Three sound bites in the Tower of Babbling. This appears to come out of California. I'm now wondering if maybe this is a little bit of dramatic acting. And yet, it's so spot on for California. A very patient, apparent police officer in California had a very California interaction with two men he pulled over.
So you do currently have a California driver's license. You just don't have a physical copy on you at the moment.
That's my preferred method of identification.
And this is?
It's a cat collar. I'm currently identifying as a cat.
Fair enough. The information here on the tag, I'm assuming, belongs to you, the boyfriend?
Yeah, that's so rude. I hope you know I'm recording.
Well, it wasn't my intention to offend you, but he just identified as a cat, and you're wearing a Harrods Waltz t-shirt, so forgive me if I came to a conclusion that you guys were involved in some sort of a homosexual arrangement.
Oh, and by the way, it gets better, because the officer offers to do it the hard way, which is to take the cat to the vet, because cats aren't licensed to drive in California. I think it might be acting, but then again, California does things like this. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling, President Trump's Surgeon General nominee, Jeanette Nashawate, triple-masked, triple-boosted, advocated for lockdowns, and praised social media platforms for censoring.
And I thank and I commend Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg for taking action, because this affects everyone. This affects our children. It affects adults. I mean, just look at the recent measles outbreak, the biggest outbreak that we've had in decades with measles. And that's no joke. Measles can cause brain inflammation and pneumonia and ear infections and hearing loss and death. So it's about time that they are taking action. And I hope and pray that other social media platforms will follow suit and do the same thing.
You know, like shutting down statements like the so-called COVID vaccines are neither safe nor effective. Or that masking doesn't work. Or that getting vitamin D outside in the natural environment is better for you than staying locked in your house when you're sick. You know, disinformation and such. Every Republican in Congress should oppose this woman's nomination. She doesn't belong anywhere near power, and she shouldn't even be on Fox News, frankly. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. New Republican leader John Thune made Mitch McConnell head of the Rules Committee, the most powerful position in the Senate. Here's Mitch McConnell being asked, what are your thoughts on running for re-election in 2026?
Okay.
Senator, you're up for election in 3 short years. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, I had a hard time hearing you.
That's okay. What are your thoughts on running for re-election in 2026?
What are my thoughts about what?
Running for re-election in 2026. Oh.
Did you hear the question, Senator? Running for re-election in 2026?
And he continued on, not being able to answer the question for several minutes until the staff hurried him away. It's not funny. It's not meant to be funny. It's tragic. Mitch McConnell and the people who run him are committed to stopping President Trump in every way. And John Thune had promised to help the president every way. Slick move, John. Slick. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note, today, when it was the worst of times for our family, when our daughter was falling apart and consistently attempting suicide, and we had to fly her down to this lockup facility across the country. And we had to spend the night in two hotel rooms hoping and just praying that she wouldn't sneak out and run away or jump out the window. And we finally got her there, and she realized that she was going to have to stay there. And it hit her. No, we're really leaving you here. She'd gone through the process when we'd been upstairs taking a tour of kicking, and they laughed about this later, kicking her to-be therapist in the shins, making a break for it, screaming at them. And we could laugh now because it actually grew into a decent relationship between those two for many years. My daughter has since reassessed. She doesn't like the treatment center. She thinks that they are incompetent, and in fact, she thinks that they are cruel to kids. One day, her story to tell. I contend that it saved her life. When we were leaving and my daughter was pleading with me to take her home, I said, honey, I can't. You've been trying to kill yourself. I can't let you die. I'll never turn my back on you. Her face changed. She said, wait a minute. Thanksgiving. I'll be here for Thanksgiving. How am I going to have my apple crisp? See, it had been a tradition since she was a little baby that I made this apple crisp. And I told her, I promise you, I will get it to you. I promise you. I never break my word to you. I promise you. As we left and drove away, both of us in tears, my wife and I went and passed out at our sister's house, so exhausted. Got home to Seattle, and I started to make the apple crisp. And then I investigated getting it to the place she was, which was purposely far away from society. So when the kids ran away, they ran away to a small town where everybody recognized them as from the mental health facility. I realized I was going to have to pack the apple crisp in dry ice. And then I had to declare the dry ice because it can be dangerous to fly. Then to get it there on time, I had to pay for express delivery upon express delivery upon express delivery. It came out to be a $350 version of apple crisp. But it got there. I was relieved later. My daughter said, my dad's sending me dessert. It's not allowed here. He'll make it happen. I begged them. I made a promise. Please, please, please let the apple crisp through. It's one of the good memories she has of that place, one of the very few. And for me, at least I was able to keep my word. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations. Until God gives us permission to speak again together, may the peace of the Lord that transcends all understanding rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Adam today and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been The Disciples View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.